and talk about what Scripture says. But I read this book that talked about Gladys's life, and it just moved me so much that I, this lady I'd never heard of before, that I felt like I needed to tell you about it. What would you do with your life if you knew God would be there for you? What purposes could you personally fulfill if you had complete trust in Him to be there and make a way? 2 weeks ago was Easter, and Anna talked to us about an angel that rolled away the stone in front of the tomb. The women were already on their way to the tomb before they even asked each other, "Who will roll away the stone?" I always wondered why they didn't figure that out in advance. Anna asked us to imagine that God was going ahead of us in our lives to roll away the stones. So with that theme, I ask you, what would you do different if you had complete confidence God was going to be there? Gladys Aylward came from a working-class family in North London, and she worked as a housemaid from her early teens, but later felt a calling to go over to China as a Christian missionary. She came of age at the time between World War I and World War II, and that's about the time that the show Downton Abbey is set. So if you're a fan of that, you can imagine what it was like for the life of a housemaid. After being for 3 months with Christian Inland Mission, she was turned away from further training due to lack of progress. She was told that those who came to China at age 30, which is when she was expected to finish, had great trouble with the Chinese language unless they were very exceptional. And the Chinese Inland Mission apparently did not think that she was very exceptional. She was still determined to go to China, so she returned to domestic work to earn money to pay for her own way to China. By the time she first visited a travel agent, she had saved £3. She found that traveling to China by boat could be done for £90. The cheapest route was technically to travel over land through Europe and Russia by rail, being £47.50, but the kindly travel agent tried to explain that this was impossible. The Trans-Siberian route was blocked at the other end because of a war between China and Russia. Gladys told him she didn't care about any silly little war. She would book the passage. She could have the £3 on account. Now, irritated, the agent tried to be patient and said, "We do not like to deliver our customers dead." "Oh, they won't hurt me. I'm a woman." Being late in the day, he had time to explain all the causes and purposes of this undeclared war. But Gladys was finally able to convince him to take her money, assuring him that by the time she got together all the rest of the money, the war would be over. So Gladys had a plan to travel to China by herself, where she would get there and have no money, have no person to make contact with, and would know none of the language. She had her first piece of luck when she heard from a friend of Jeannie Lawson. Miss Lawson was a missionary in her 70s who'd spent her entire career in China, outlived her husband, and had just returned to China. She had said in a letter that she had hoped that she had a young lady to carry on her work. Gladys was excited. She wrote to Miss Lawson and started doing any work she could, no matter how menial, on any time she had off. She heard back that if she could get to the right city in China, that she could join. So she kept working towards that magic total of £47.10. In due time, Gladys set off. From the coast of Britain, she sailed to France and traveled by rail across Europe and Russia on the Trans-Siberian Railway until she arrived on the Manchurian border. She kept going even when no one on the train spoke English, even when the train carried Russian soldiers, even when the porter fervently tried to get her to vacate, and kept going when no one was on the train but Russian soldiers. Eventually, she got off the train when she was the only one on the train. It stopped and didn't go anywhere. She had to walk back one rail stop to the previous stop to get anywhere. And to do that, she walked along the rails even overnight. She slept by the tracks, carrying her food and her little stove with her. She heard these howlings in the distance, and she wondered, who let those dogs out? They were not dogs. She eventually made it to the Pacific coast, to the city of Vladivostok. Russian officials seemed to misunderstand her passport, which listed her occupation as missionary. To them, it said machinist. A large man led her all over the city, trying to convince her how wonderful Russia was, trying to get her to stay. Once left alone, a woman warned her that she was in danger. Communist Russia was desperate for factory workers, and they would be able to send her by train to locations unknown where she'd never be heard of again. After regaining her passport and waiting in her hotel room until midnight, she was led down to the docks. Her only chance, she was told, was to convince the captain of a Japanese ship to take her out of Russia for no money. And this she convinced him. She traveled from one Japanese port to another, and with help from the British consul, she took another ship to China. She took rail and bus, trading in her unused ticket to meet Mrs. Lawson. For the final leg of her journey to the town of Yancheng in Hsinchu province, she traveled by mule. In fact, everything in the province was carried by mule. It was very mountainous and remote. None of the roads there were suitable for vehicle traffic, and short of traveling by foot, that was the only way anything moved. Now, Christianity had come to China in Beijing more than 1,000 years before, but had never made it to the remote Hsinchu province. Very few Westerners had even been seen in Yancheng. Mrs. Lawson had spent most of her career in a mission just south of this province. She was staying in a building in terrible shape. They could afford it because it was rumored to be haunted. Everything was broken there. But having been there a short time, the mission had made no progress. The only other person with her was Yang, the cook, a Chinese convert who had come with her to Yancheng. Furthermore, whenever Mrs. Lawson or Gladys stepped outside, the people would literally throw mud at them and filth. To them, they called them foreign devils. Mrs. Lawson took this in stride, and Gladys learned to take it in stride also. After a few weeks, the residents couldn't be bothered to throw mud at them any longer, and they had an idea how to gain an audience. They would turn the building into a hotel. Yancheng had been a walled town for many centuries, even a millennia, where the nearest town, both east and west, was one day's journey. The trains of mules and coolies coming to Yancheng had to stop at a hotel in the town for the night. They could charge the standard rate for food and lodging and tell Bible stories for free. Mrs. Lawson assured the Chinese love stories. The mulers would travel the entire province carrying the gospel message with them. It was even built originally as a hotel. They repaired the building, ordered a sign painted, and cooked food. But they had one problem. No customers came. The three of them met to discuss the solution. Mrs. Lawson told Gladys that she had to bring the customers in. But how? She had to drag the customers in. The trains of mules were each tied one to the other. Each one was tied to the one behind it. Gladys was to grab the first mule in the mule train and drag it into the courtyard of the hotel. Gladys was a small woman, but she discovered she would have unexpected allies in this challenge. The mules. The tired mules knew that when they entered the hotel, they could be unpacked and fed. And once inside, nothing on earth could force the mules out the door again until the next morning. The mules didn't even consider them foreign devils. And this was considered perfectly ethical in this province. Gladys does this. She waits for a mule to come to the door, and she grabs it and pulls it inside. And all the mules follow. All of the muleers see that it's one of these foreign devils and scatter, except for the one attached to the first mule. He had gotten his arm caught in the reins and was dragged in with the mule train. Then, once inside, he saw Mrs. Lawson, who had all white hair, which was very unusual. At this, he shrieked and pulled himself loose and ran outside. But Yang went, talked to the owners of the mules, and convinced them that he was perfectly normal. Nothing had hurt him. Why don't they come and spend the night? And in due time, the mules being too valuable, they came back. After about 6 weeks, it was no longer necessary to drag in customers. More and more muleers became return customers. Gladys practiced her Chinese fervently and learned several Bible stories in Chinese by heart and took turns telling them in the evenings. Yang, the cook, also took a few turns telling stories, but he seemed to confuse the relationships between some of the people in the Bible. More than once, they heard him tell the story about how Jesus had put all the animals on the ark and sailed it to Galilee. He really liked Noah. Less than a year after Gladys entered Yang Chin, Mrs. Lawson died. After she died, Yang, the cook, recommended that Gladys visit the Mandarin. The Mandarin was the government of Yanchen and the surrounding villages. The Mandarin himself had the power of life and death. Now, Gladys had no idea what she would have to say to this gentleman. And every class of person there had its own protocol for meeting and bowing to such an official as the Manchurian. But Gladys was not like anyone else in the province, so no one seemed to know the protocol. She never went to see him until one day the Mandarin came to her. In essence, Gladys just did a bunch of bowing and stopped when it seemed like enough. The central government had dictated that all the foot binding in China had to stop immediately. Inspection had to be made throughout the countryside. The inspector had to be female, had to have unbound feet, and had to start right away. Gladys was the only one who could do it. No one else had unbound feet. Now, I think explaining this practice to adults, muscleless children, is a challenging thing. So I appreciate Barb in her efforts to do that. But they didn't wear wooden shoes when they had bound feet. But I suggested that kids try walking on blocks of wood because it gives the sensation of trying to walk on crippled feet. You can't go anywhere for any distance on those feet. You can't dance. You can't walk in mountains. And so you can imagine, up to this point in the story, that is why Gladys had not encountered women. They all stayed at home. In fact, this practice did not originate from Chinese religion, but it was several hundreds of years old. And it started with the higher classes. And it was a prestige to gain a bride that way. But in time, everyone bound their feet. Everyone except for the ones that were just too poor that they couldn't survive it. And perhaps those that lived on boats. But no one in this province lived in boats. And it eventually just became a source of objectification of women. That it was like, hey, I have status. I can afford to have a woman that can't do anything outside, who's handicapped. And it just perpetuated itself. And although the women bound the children's feet, I'm sure it was very heartbreaking for them, because to not bind their feet would be to limit their ability to get married. Although she was to report directly to the Mandarin if she did this, Gladys was not sure she could put conditions on the job. But she decided to risk his displeasure. "You must realize, Excellency, that if I accept this position, I shall try and convert the people of this province to Christianity wherever I go." Some of his officials in his entourage looked frozen in horror at this. After a short pause, the Mandarin said quietly, "I care nothing for your religion or to whom you preach, but it is important that you do this work. And the central government is impatient." Everyone drew a sigh of relief. Despite Yang's efforts to encourage Gladys to see the Mandarin, Yang himself had disappeared for hours when he came. She then told him, he then told her that she was an important official now. The foreign devil had become the personal foot inspector of the Mandarin. She would travel with a mule with two guards and go to each village. The guard would call for the village elder, and the elder would call for the village to gather. After everyone came in from the fields, Gladys would speak. All foot binding in China was to stop, and the feet of younger children who could be made to walk on them would be unbound. The first time that she did this, she wasn't sure what to do next. She still remembered it. She walked to a nearby house, a shack really, and went inside. She found a girl about 3 years old clinging to her mother. Gladys tried to sound authoritative. "Unbind her feet." A couple of neighbor women and a grandmother appeared, and the four Chinese women started working to unbind the girl's feet. To relieve her own stress while this happened, Gladys kept a running commentary. "Quick, quick, unbind her feet. Do it, yes. If God had meant for women to have bound feet, they would have been created that way. Yes, yes." Once they were unbound, she made her way to the child and unwrapped each toe that was curled underneath her foot, and then massaged the girl's feet. And the tiny girl giggled. It tickled her. And it was infectious. Soon, everyone wanted to help unbind feet. Even then, the ladies agreed, yes, yes, this is a good law. This is a good law. Her job as a foot inspector continued for years. For years, she traveled to all the villages and reached every home. She was welcomed everywhere. She brought news from the outside world and news of Jesus Christ. Now, Evangeline read from 2 Timothy 1, 6 through 8 today. And in this, Paul writes to Timothy from prison and refers to Timothy's speaking gift. He says, I remind you to fan into flame the gift of God. This seems to be some kind of speaking gift. And he's encouraged to do that because Timothy is a young man compared to people that he's over. And I don't really know what passages Gladys spoke to, but these verses really reminded me of Gladys. And I had memorized them once in a slightly different translation. Verse 7 says, "For the Spirit God gave does not make us timid, but gives us power and love and self-discipline." And I think that you might agree that Gladys had power and love and self-discipline. Verse 8 says, "Do not be ashamed of the testimony of our Lord, join in the sufferings for the gospel with Jesus Christ. Now, Gladys loved China. She loved the people. She loved the landscape, being in the mountains, but she endured suffering there too. And following Christ is often like that. There is joy and there is suffering together. This time she was in China, stretched on for years and months, and communities took root in the villages around Yongcheng. But it was her second year in Yongcheng when Gladys received an urgent message from on red paper that there was a riot in the men's prison. Gladys had no idea what that had to do with her. The messenger jumped up and down on one foot and the other and insisted she come and come quickly. And she did come. Horrible noises came from within the prison walls. The warden of the prison explained that the prisoners were killing each other. They were murderers, bandits, and thieves, and the soldiers were afraid of them. What could she do? The warden stepped forward and told her that she must go in and stop the fighting. Me? Go in there? Are you crazy? If I go in there, they will kill me. She was just one small woman. But how can they kill you? You tell everyone you came here to China because you have the living God inside you. Gladys realized if she gave up her faith now, she would be finished in Yongcheng. She agreed to go in. They opened the prison gate with an enormous key and pushed her inside. Bodies were laid out on the ground. One was bleeding from the head and clearly dead. One prisoner chased the others around with a large hatchet. She had no idea what to do. Chasing another prisoner, the one man came towards Gladys. She stepped forward and said, "Give me that chopper. Give it to me at once," as furiously as she could. The prisoner took two steps towards her and meekly handed over the hatchet. There were 50 or 60 prisoners here. She decided to press her advantage and called for them to line up. And then she scolded them like they were naughty school children. She told them to clean up the mess, and since they couldn't explain how the riot had started, she asked them to appoint a spokesperson to explain it. There were more episodes from the book I read on Gladys, but there is not time to tell you all of them. But God was there to roll away the stones that were too big for this small woman to roll away. After 20 years in China, a missionary organization offered to pay for her travel back to Britain, for she needed medical care. Alan Burgess was a BBC features editor and interviewed Gladys soon after she arrived, hoping that she might have something interesting to tell. From that, Gladys authored a book, The Small Woman. If you've heard of Gladys before today, it's probably because of the 1958 Hollywood movie based on her life. It was called The Inn of the Six Happiness. It casts the tall, blonde, Swedish Ingrid Bergman as the dark, small-haired, Cockney-accented housemaid. But that was just one of the inaccuracies. In the film, Gladys's dangerous, complicated travels across Russia, Japan, and China were reduced to a few rude soldiers. Gladys hated the film, especially because it greatly exaggerated her love interest. The book has much to say about the time period in Japan, time period of Japan invading when it came to that part of China. This was the early part of World War II, before World War II came to Europe. By this time, Gladys had adopted 5 orphan children, and many more children became orphans in the war. In the climax of the book and the movie, Gladys is traveling with nearly 100 children, all by herself. The first 12 days were on foot, and they set off with only about 2 days' food. But they made it, traveling on back roads and through forests to stay away from the Japanese patrol. Obviously, that would have been impossible if the girls in the group had had bound feet. She was the only adult with them. if we can have the music team come up. When Gladys, when they got scared, Gladys encouraged the children to sing hymns. As a child, Gladys liked to sing hymns really loud when she was scared. So I'm going to encourage you now to sing this hymn really loud.